I'm Josh Scherer.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich.
Free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. This is Joe Beamer. Mark is taking some personal time off, but we expect him back soon. In the meantime, you know I'm happy to be with you in this final hour, and the deadline has hit. We are 4 minutes post-deadline, and to talk about the deadline and beyond is Scott Warman from FanDuel Sports Midwest. Scott, good afternoon.
Joe, great to meet you, man. Welcome to St. Louis. I understand you're all geeked up about your Mets getting Ryan Helsley, huh?
I'm very happy about the bullpen. Now, if they could just come back to New York tomorrow and actually have the bats working, then we might have a complete team.
Well, it takes a little bit of time, but I'll tell you what, that's a heck of a top of the order that you have there in New York. But I'll tell you what the San Diego Padres did today, kind of getting off the Cardinal thing. Acquiring a couple of big bats, or at least one big bat from Baltimore. I think the Padres and a couple of teams are definitely going for it. It's really been an interesting day as trade deadline officially ended just a couple of minutes ago.
I know the Padres are bulking up, and it just reminds me of the hell I went through in the 2022 wild card series. But Scott... Scott, right before we went to a break, we heard about Phil Maton. Now, we all knew that it was, 99% sure that he was going to get traded, and it looks like he did right before the market closed.
Yeah, Maton is apparently going to the Texas Rangers for a couple of prospects, and what those prospects are hasn't been released as of yet. The Cardinals haven't made it official, but all reports from national writers and insiders are saying that Maton is being moved. And Maton, actually, Joe, he didn't even travel with the ball club to San Diego. He, along with Steven Matz, of course, the Matz trade to Boston was made after the game last night around 11 or so Central time. So those guys pretty much were anticipating that they were going to be dealt before this 5 o'clock trade deadline. And sure enough, Maton is the one to go. So the guys that had expiring contracts out of the bullpen is pretty much the route the Cardinals took to try to add or beef up, if you will, their prospect pool down in the minor leagues.
Hey, Scotty, Ethan here. You look at now, as Joe mentioned a moment ago, the deadline coming and going now. The Cardinals bringing in a lot of low-level prospects in the Helsley deal. They get Blaze Jordan back from Boston for Steven Matz. Not sure who the prospects are here in this Phil Maton deal. I know it's hard to really get a gauge as to what these prospects will be, but up to this point, it sounds like from, nationally, everything that the Cardinals have got back, they feel pretty good about, and a lot of people like the potential that of some of these young guys.
Yeah, I'm the same with you, Ethan. I read about some of these prospects that the Cardinals have acquired, and some of those guys that follow it on a day-to-day basis have actually given the Cardinals some high marks. In fact, you think about the trade late last night, guys, from Steven Matz going to Boston, and the Cardinals acquiring first baseman third baseman Blaze Jordan. Well, that's a guy that the soon-to-be president of baseball operations, Chaim Bloom, actually drafted when he was with the Red Sox organization just 5 years ago. So obviously there is some familiarity, and obviously Chaim Bloom probably is appealed by someone like that. And, obviously it tells me, at least Ethan and Joe, is the fact that, maybe Chaim, and we'll find out here eventually if Chaim did have some say-so in working with current president of baseball operations, Sean Mozeliak, on some of these deals, because obviously now the Cardinals are looking towards the future instead of the here and now. So you would imagine if that's the case that, Chaim obviously might have had some guys on the list from each team that he was kind of interested in. And so that's hence why the deals have been made. It's kind of an interesting situation when you think about the Cardinals. They trade three relievers, and they don't get any MLB players, per se, back in this deal for right now. So now the Cardinals have to go out and they have to bring back three players from their minor leagues. And Joe, just to let you, and I know Ethan knows this, and other Cardinal fans, I mean, the Cardinals have just a plethora of injuries within their minor league system as far as pitching is concerned. So we're getting down to the nitty-gritty as far as, you know, what they can bring up. In fact, they had a game today, the Memphis Redbirds did. That's the Cardinals AAA team. And there were several names, if you will, that have played up with the Cardinals professionally that didn't even get in today's game for the Memphis Redbirds, which you would presume that at least a couple of those guys, or three of them at least, will be coming up. But I think the other intriguing part is, how is this going to play out in the last 2 months of the season? You kind of hope that there isn't a serious injury, especially to your starting rotation, because I don't know where the Cardinals actually return or go to try to fill the bill. God forbid somebody gets injured here in the last couple of months of the season.
Scott, looking at the team, I mean, as you mentioned, they're going to have to dip down to the minor leagues. But is there anyone that you're surprised is still on the team post deadline?
You know, honestly, Joe, not really. You know, there was some chatter about maybe Nolan Arenado being back on the list of trades. But I think the thing with Arenado is, first of all, he has the no trade clause, and as we saw during the offseason, there was actually a trade between the Cardinals and the Astros, and he nixed the deal because he has that no trade clause in his contract. The other part of it that's kind of tricky, if you're thinking about trading Arenado, is he has a very sizable contract. And so the other nuance to that whole thing is, how much do you have to eat? How much are you willing to eat of that contract when you're trying to move a guy like Arenado? So I know that was a name that came up. I know several other names that came up, like Lars Nootbaar, who's down in Springfield AA rehabbing after his injury. There's also Brendan Donovan's name that was bantied about. But to be honest with you, for me personally, I'm not really surprised that they didn't make a deal. I think if you dealt a guy, especially like a Brendan Donovan, if you're going to deal a guy like that, who's maybe the heart and soul of this team along with Wilson Contreras, I mean, you're going to have to get a whole heck of a lot for the Cardinals to steer away from a guy like Brendan Donovan, who was your all-star this year in the Midsummer Classic. So to be honest with you, not really. You know, seeing the guys that were, you know, their tenure was up as far as their contracts were concerned, that's something that didn't surprise me. And also, and I know Ethan's down in the locker room, and he's probably heard this as well, is, you know, Ryan Helsley's always kept an open the option that, you know, this is where he's been. He's only known the Cardinal organization throughout his entire life, going through the minors up to, you know, many years here in St. Louis, that, you know, there could be the realm of possibility, Joe, that he could come back after this year, finishing off at the Mets and wherever their season winds up, that he could come back as a St. Louis Cardinal again. So, but again, you also have to look at it from the situation that you have a different leader running the organization now in Chaim Bloom instead of John Mozeliak. But I think that option still is there, obviously, from what Helsley said over the last week or so.
Katie Wu reporting that the Cardinals receiving back in exchange for Phil Maton a couple of prospects. Mason Molina is a left-handed pitcher currently in high A for Texas, 6'2", 230 pounds. He was a seventh-round pick by the Brewers in 2024. And then Skylar Hayes, he's in AAA, a right-handed pitcher that was drafted in the fourth round by the Rangers in 2023. So that as well as some international money in exchange. So those are the pieces in the Phil Maton deal. So now we know all the pieces that the Cardinals have received back from the different teams that they traded for. So as far as continuing on with this conversation, you know, I know that the expectation, right, was that these three were going to be the three that were traded, Scott. I'm curious, you know, there had been some names that had been kind of fluttered around. Someone out there had mentioned that perhaps there was some interest in Nootbaar, Brendan Donovan, Alec Burleson. I know you just talked about that a little bit. How much do you think that John Mozeliak and Chaim Bloom and the transition in leadership had to play into specifically only guys on expiring contracts being the ones that were traded? And as a result, with Chaim Bloom taking over here in the offseason, could you see the Cardinals using some of the redundancies that they have on the offseason trade market and maybe trying to bring in some pieces that they need?
Yeah, you know, I think, Ethan, and I mentioned this, I was on a station down in Springfield, Missouri earlier today, and we had this very same discussion. And again, this is a hunch. It's not like I've sat back and had a long conversation with Haim Bloom or anything. And, you know, only I don't even think Haim knows once he takes things over. Yes, looking at what we have seen with these trades, do I think that there is conversation, obviously, between the current president of baseball operations and the new president of baseball operations after this season? When you look at some of the parts that the Cardinals have brought back in some of these deals, yes. Is there going to be a different route of how things are handled? I truly believe, and again, this is just a hunch, I think we're going to see a very interesting and active offseason. I think Himes definitely putting his imprint on what you're seeing, not only from what we have seen the Cardinals acquire in these trades that they've made, the three of them over the last couple of days, but also look back a couple of weeks ago, Ethan, when we're talking about the MLB draft. The Cardinals picked, 12 pitchers? Mm-hmm. And all of them are guys that try to throw the ball through a brick wall. Where, you know, you even look through the system, the Cardinals have guys that are pitch to contact. You even look at some guys that they've drafted as everyday players, and it's about power. Look at Blaze Jordan. Look at Jesus Baez, who they acquired. He's got power. So it looks like you're starting to see kind of the route, if you will, of what Haim Bloom is looking to add to this organization, what he wants out of the St. Louis Cardinals as the head of the operation. He wants to get more power in the lineup, and he wants more power pitching instead of the pitch to contact. At least that's how I see it, what we've seen in the trade deadline, and of course what we saw a couple of weeks ago in the MLB amateur draft as well.
With that in mind, this is the second sell-off in 3 years for the St. Louis Cardinals. Is it realistic to think a year from now we'll be talking about a team that's buying and making a run for the playoffs?
A tough question. I don't think the odds are very high. I think it all, Joe, depends, honestly, on what happens in the offseason. And while most people are like, no, there's no way, and the percentages are probably not. You're a couple, 2-3 years away with this organization. Again, seeing what Haim wants to do in the next one or two off seasons. But the only reason I say that with just a small trepidation is just for the fact that I don't think, Joe, you'd ask most people before the season and you saw what the Cardinals did basically through the first half of the year. I don't think anybody would have thought the Cardinals would have been at their precipice at 9 games above 500. So obviously there is some talent there. And they do have some pieces to the puzzle, is trying to figure that whole thing out from a pitching standpoint, but from an everyday lineup situation. And now we'll see what the Cardinals want to do and see if they want to, you know, try to, you know, spend some money, especially on pitching, to try to bolster that once you get into the 2026 season. But, you know, short answer for that, Joe, is I don't think the percentages are very high that they become buyers again next year, but let's wait and see how things play out, because there's so much to be had, especially in this offseason. I think one of the things besides a player acquisition standpoint is you try to get your 26 to 40 man roster is a lot of people got to sit back and say, hey, you know, does Haim Bloom want to bring in his own guy as a manager, or do you bring back Ollie Marmol, who I think has proven him to a lot of people out there that, hey, you know what? A lot of people didn't expect, as I mentioned, what this ball club did in the first half of the season. You know, do you give Ollie another chance with a different guy in charge of the organization? So there's just so many balls up in the air that you got to juggle to see what happens, especially in this offseason.
You know, I'm a very optimistic person, Scott, and I know we're talking, you know, a few years down the road. But, I mean, realistically, the Cardinals are 5.5 games out with 2 months left. I mean, what do you think that you're going to see out of this team? What's there to watch for in these final 2 months?
right now, it's not very hopeful. I mean, when you just got shut out 2 days in a row by the Marlins, early this year or this month, he got shut out 2 days in a row by the Pirates. That to me, as you kind of felt, you looked at the numbers, and I said this, well, he had a great start to the season. Back of my mind is like, look at the back of the baseball cards, or just look up some of the numbers of some of these pitchers in the second half, and we're seeing it, unfortunately, with Sonny Gray, who's their ace. He's really struggling here to start the second half of the season, but that's kind of been his MO, especially in the month of July. But for this team that has some guys that can really hit, not to see them, or to see them actually do what they're doing with the lack of offense here lately, that's the one that concerns me. So for me, my hope is that the Cardinals kind of, after they get this whole trade deadline behind them and just start forging ahead, is to play the baseball that we saw earlier this year, where they were, you know, kind of what I'd say as an older guy, Joe, is, you know, playing 80s whitey ball type of baseball, where they weren't hitting a lot of home runs, but they're running the bases well, playing great defense behind their pitching. And it was really, I thought, some exciting baseball that we got to see through the first half of the season.
Are you, you know, I went to the football game at Bristol Motor Speedway in 2016, saw my beloved Hokies lose to the Tennessee Volunteers. Are you looking forward to this Atlanta-Cincinnati game at Bristol Motor Speedway? You think it's going to be cool?
I think it's going to be really interesting to see, because since you've been there, I haven't been there, but I know that it's just a massive stadium. Just to see the dynamics from that alone is going to be really intriguing to me. I'm really kind of excited about this. I'm glad that Major League Baseball is doing this. You know, we saw the Field of Dreams games, a couple of years in a row, and the Cardinals and Giants were down at Rickwood in Birmingham. I'll tell you a real quick story, Joe, is I worked for the Missouri Valley Conference, and a year ago in 2024, we did the baseball tournament in Evansville, Indiana, and they have one of the third oldest baseball stadium in all of our nation. It's called Bossy Field. And there is conversation about them having a game at that Bossy Field. Obviously, an older stadium, there's upgrades that need to be made and what have you. But I think this is really cool, because I had an opportunity, I had some downtime, to go over to that stadium. And it's kind of like if you go to Wrigley or Fenway, there's just an aura about some of these old stadiums. And I'm sure the same way, and in fact, talking to like guys like John Rooney and Ricky Horton, just the aura that they had in being at Rickwood. And I'm sure there's the same thing, even though I would imagine if you're broadcasting the game, you're going to be way high up away from the ballpark, or at Bristol Speedway, I should say, and trying to catch the ballpark. But yes, I think it's going to be really intriguing. I'm fascinated by all that stuff when you look at a neutral side, if you will, and something a little interesting. It's kind of like if you look at it and try correlated to hockey, where hockey started doing the stadium games and the Winter Classics. And I think it kind of has that little feel to it, if you will, kind of like what the NHL did.
Well, you might not be surprised. I was at the very first Winter Classic here in Buffalo. Scott, great talking with you, man.
All right, buddy. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it. Scott Warman, he is the FanDuel Sports Midwest studio host for your St. Louis Cardinals. We'll be back after this. Hey, welcome back. Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon. Here on 97.1 FM Talk. Sorry. Isn't that funny? You know, I do.
I'm Josh Eyre.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich.
Free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
The voice practices, the lessons and whatever. And then as soon as I turn the mic on, I start sounding like crap. But anyway, thanks again to Scott Warman and to Ethan. That was the trade deadline wrap. And, you know, hey, like I said, I'm Mr. Optimistic. I sit here and, you know, I remember thinking a few years ago that the Bills weren't going to win the division. And then they went on a winning streak and, you know, through the tough part of their schedule, and won the division. So I'm not saying the Cardinals are going to win the division, but 5.5 games out, hey, let's see what they can, let's see how they can entertain us these next 2 months. Scott mentioned the Winter Classic, and the Winter Classic was my freshman year of college, New Year's Day 2008, right? So I'm a college kid, go downtown we have a big ball drop here in Buffalo, go to that, and then go right to the stadium. I'm not kidding. Right to the stadium, start tailgating for the first ever Winter Classic. Was so excited. You know, the Sabres had a decent team that year. They ended up missing the playoffs. And losing to the Pittsburgh Penguins on a shootout, it was so deflating. But it was a fun time, and that stadium that they played in is actually entering its final season this year. And pretty excited, Kids Day, you know, Ethan and I were talking about preseason in the last hour. Kids Day, it's the one home preseason game this year for the Bills, and I'm like, I have to take my son because I want to be able to say that my son was at a game in the stadium that I grew up to and fell in love with the Bills back in the 90s. So I'm looking, I am never looking forward to the preseason, but I am looking forward to that game at the, what will soon be the old Highmark Stadium as the Bills move across the street into the new Highmark Stadium. And to put the cherry on top of this whole story, I am going next Wednesday at 9 a.m. to pick my seats in the new Highmark Stadium in Orchard Park, New York, for the Buffalo Bills. And hopefully those seats I can then pass on to my son, who will be able to say he was at a game at the old Highmark Stadium. So, you know, sports, there's a lot of people out there I know. They don't watch sports. They don't follow it. But for me growing up, and this is what my connection is, I mean, sports was the reason we went on a lot of trips. A lot of family trips were around Virginia Tech games when they played in Washington, when they played in Columbus, when they played in Atlanta. You know, you get the family and yet you go to the games. Yeah, sports has always been college football, NFL, baseball, hockey, always been really close to me. And hopefully I can pass that passion on to my son. When we come back, we will be talking about AI. I am obsessed with AI. There's, you know, part of me is really scared of it because I saw the movie in the early 2000s. And the other part of me wants to get to know it better, right? You've got our email here at Odyssey. Our email, you open it up, and before you can actually read the email, there's a AI summary of what the person said in the email. So if you want to ignore the whole thing, you can just read the AI summary. George Rosenthal is here to talk about the latest comments from Mark Zuckerberg on AI glasses. We'll talk about that and much more after this on 97.1 FM Talk. Hey, welcome back. Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk. And we are joined with one of the owners of ThrottleNet, George Rosenthal. George, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Before we get talking, I want to play. This is what we're talking about. This is Mark Zuckerberg talking about AI. Let's play clip one.
This vision is different from others in the industry who want to direct AI at automating all of the valuable work. At Meta, we believe in putting the power of superintelligence in people's hands to direct it towards what they value in their own lives. I expect that people will spend less time on productivity software and more time creating and connecting. I think that personal devices like glasses that can see what we see, hear what we hear, and interact with us throughout the day are going to become our main computing devices.
George, he's talking about glasses powered with AI. What do you think of Zuckerberg's comments?
I think he's 100% correct. I think the wearable AI is what's going to end up happening. And, you know, he made a great point during that presentation. He said, look, you know, this is something I took kind of weird at first. He's like, if you don't have AI glasses or AI wearables, you're at a cognitive disadvantage. And what he means by that is it's kind of like having not having a smartphone today. If you had a flip phone and you walked around in today's world, you would be left behind completely in everything. From your daily life to talking and texting with family, your work life, everything would be completely different if you did not have a smartphone. And that's the way this is going to be, in my mind, in my opinion, with wearables and especially glasses. And I do have, full disclosure, I do have a pair of the Ray-Ban Meta glasses, the smart glasses. They don't have AI on them yet, but they are fascinating and a little creepy to wear at the same time.
So when you talk about AI glasses, George, I mean, forgive me, but what exactly are we talking about? So I remember when Google came out with these glasses like 8 years ago. When you're saying AI, what do you mean? What will we be wearing on our face?
So whether they're sunglasses or regular clear lenses, whether they the lenses themselves are you know based on your vision and helping your vision. But the point is there's a computer inside the glasses, just like the smart glasses you can get right now at Best Buy. You can get them for $400. And it talks to you. You can, it's a little speaker right at the bottom of the glasses. You can hear everything that the glasses tell you. But these glasses will be watching and with you throughout your entire day, learning about your job, learning about your family, learning about your daily tasks, helping you with everything that you do, recognizing faces. And I am terrible at memorizing names with faces. These things will see somebody in front of you and whisper in your ear what their name is. So it's completely going to be with you everywhere you go and everything you do, and then integrate that into a smart home so that when you get home, the AI is built into your smart home devices, and then you have a complete assistant with you at all times.
So that's glasses, George, and I'll get back to the glasses in a minute, but you're talking about AI wearables. What if someone doesn't want to wear glasses? You talked about the smartphone, which I think is a great analogy. If when this, you know, starts hitting, if you don't have the glasses, you're out, or is there a different kind of AI wearable in the future?
Well, so Apple's vision were these big goggles, and you know eventually they're going to get smaller and more compact. But I think you know socially you're not going to walk around with goggles on your face and make that pretty much a norm. If you don't wear glasses, it's going to be everything like a watch. I have an Apple smartwatch on right now that's tracking everything health wise, and you can play music from it and everything like that. But imagine AI built into your watch that then talks to your phone, that then talks to your glasses, that then talks to your smart home devices when you get home. And so it's helping you completely along the way with your daily life and everything. I mean, managing your tasks, filling calendars. Like, so let's say you're having a meeting with somebody and they say, hey, let's meet next Tuesday at 2. And you say, well, where would you like to meet? Well, let's meet at restaurant ABC. Well, AI has already put that calendar invite on your calendar while you're sitting there talking to the person. So you don't even have to create a calendar invite and send it to anybody. Those kinds of things, it's going to drastically improve how you do everything in life and helping you with everything that you're doing, from any questions you have, directions. And soon, augmented reality will be built into your glasses and or wearables, so that if you, let's say you're going on a walk and you look up at a building and you don't know what the building is, it'll tell you this building was built in this year and here's who's in that building, and augmented reality will be part of everything that you're doing.
So there'll be a time where I can't lie to my wife and say, oh, I forgot. I actually have to tell her I don't want to do something.
Yes, I have a feeling we are not too far away from that completely. That will be completely gone. Yes, that will be completely transparent. Yeah. Unless you ask the AI to lie for you, which in some cases you can get it to do that for you right now.
So, you know, you talk about it, so it will go back to a base, right? It will be stored somewhere. But, I mean, will the AIs be talking to each other? So let's say you and I are having a conversation in person and you introduce me to someone, right? Okay. Now, yeah. Someone else wearing those AI glasses runs into that person later in the day. Now, because my AI glasses learn that person's name, is that person's name now going to be in the other person's AI glasses before they even introduce themselves?
I think initially no, but eventually yes. It will all be one big system, depending on which platform you go with, whether it's a Meta, Apple, Google, whatever that may be, because not all systems are going to talk to everything because they're competitors with each other. So, but yeah, whatever platform that you're on, let's say Apple comes out with the glasses and you have a smart home with all the Apple gear and you have an Apple smartwatch and an Apple iPhone, all of that complete environment will talk to each other. So it just depends on which environments. It's basically a race. It's a complete race to see who can get the biggest AI platform and that people will adopt, because it's going to be harder to leave that environment once you've signed up for it.
So the more people on an AI platform, the smarter that AI is.
Yes.
So
yes. And
right
it'll
now,
also be, it's continuously learning, and it'll be learning everything about you as well and becoming more and more and more personal to you as you go through about your life with the AI. And then what's going to be really wild is when they start putting robots in your house that can then assist you with everyday tasks that are using the same AI.
So, you know, right now, before, you know, this, I'm not wearing AI. A lot of the audience isn't. So in the AI that we have now, what platform would you say is in the lead of knowledge and advancement?
So they all have different, not all, but most have different uses that they really specialize in. My favorite, though, that I use every day, all day long, is OpenAI ChatGPT. That is literally at my finger. It's the closest app to my thumb on my phone. It's the closest app on my watch. I literally use it every day, all day long, for everything. I don't even do Google searches anymore. I literally use ChatGPT to search the internet instead of Google. That's my total favorite. Now, will it always be like, wait, I don't know. I think it's probably going to change. And again, if a large organization like Meta comes out with an environment that I really like, then I can adopt and change over to that environment and tie it into every aspect of my day.
So, I mean, George, let's fast forward 10 years into the future, 15 years into the future. What is one thing that AI won't be able to do? Where is its limitations? Where is, what's the max for AI?
Well, so we're now at the beginning stages of it. This is the horse and buggy stages of AI. When it gets to artificial general intelligence, AGI, that's when it will be smarter than any human that's ever lived. That is going to be the beginning of crazy in the way of whether we get really stupid as a species or whether we use it and get smarter. I have a feeling it's going to be the first where we all get a little more dumber because we're relying so much on AGI. But in the future, like 5, 10, 15 years, it's going to be robots. It's going to be AI, but it's going to be AI inside of a robot that can help you throughout your entire day.
So when does it get dangerous, George? Because, I hear the scare tactics of AI taking over. When does it get dangerous and it might be time to, I don't know, reel back some of this stuff?
Well, I think Pandora's box is open. I don't think we're going to be able to reel back a lot of this stuff. But I think it gets scary when AGI, artificial general intelligence, is then matched with robots. That's when it gets scary. I think right now it's a matter of improving your life, your lifestyle, making you more efficient in everything that you do, from home tasks all the way to work tasks. I think that's where we're at, and we're going to be even more and more efficient with artificial intelligence. But I think you're going to see it in everything: cars, washing machines, microwaves. Everything will have that intelligence built into it. My refrigerator already can tell me what's in the refrigerator and what out of what's in there, what ingredients I can then make for dinner. And I can access that from anywhere. And so it's that's the kind of thing where AI is not just going to be an app on your phone. It'll be tied into everything that you do and wear.
Now, cheap people like me are going to have this very question. The AI glasses that are going to be coming out that, you said is going to be like a smartphone, and I think you're right. Is that going to be another data plan, or are these the kind of things that run off the data on your phone, kind of like my Apple Watch does?
So right now, the Meta sunglasses that I have, I'm actually holding them right now, they talk to my phone. So they're using the data on my phone. Now, okay, There's a camera built in, speaker built in. You can talk to it. You can, touch the side of the glasses and change the volume, change the song that you're listening to. You can live broadcast on Facebook for up to 30 minutes on a full battery charge.
Those are
the kinds of things. It's unbelievable. It's so crazy. Now, I will say there's a privacy concern that is an issue here, because you're walking around with a camera that's looking at everybody and everything and then recording that in its memory, so to speak, as to what the people are saying and doing and so forth, along with live pictures, video, and live broadcasting. So there's going to be some privacy issues that we're all going to have to deal with as a society when it comes to wearables or any type of AI built into anything that you're holding or working with. So that I think is going to be an issue when it comes to some sort of regulation that's going to have to make sure that we all have some sort of privacy when we're all walking around with glasses that have AI and cameras built in.
George, really interesting stuff. I could keep on going if I wasn't up against the clock. Thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the opportunity. It was a lot of fun talking to you.
George Rosenthal, he is one of the owners of ThrottleNet, telling you about these AI glasses and beyond. We'll wrap up the show when we come back here on 97.1 FM Talk. Hey, welcome back. Joe Bieber in for Mark Reardon. I got to tell you, this AI stuff, it is really interesting. But George brought up.
I'm Josh Eyre.
And I'm Nicole Eniade.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich.
Free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
Flip phones, and there's going to be a time where not having the AI wearables is like having a flip phone. We had a guy here at Odyssey Buffalo who had a flip phone until they made us do the check-in with for our emails. You know, we have to check in on an app to verify. He had a flip phone all the way up until that point. He finally got forced into getting a smartphone. He is the last person I know, other than my grandmother, who was 100. Literally, she was 100. He was the last person I knew that had a flip phone.
Okay, that entertains me. Was he just like a curmudgeon who said, I don't need anything else? Right. Or, why?
He said, he goes, I have my laptop. I have my computer here at work. I have my laptop at home. I don't text. He's very much, he wants to talk to you in person. He's the only person here I've never received a text message from.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. I give him all the credit in the world. I did a show a few weeks ago about, Gen Z is going back to the flip phone. They're talking about basic. And hey, I think we need to incentivize verbal communication. I mean,
absolutely.
How many people here have called somebody, had them not answer, and then 2 seconds later they text you, hey, what's up? What did you want?
Oh, for sure. For sure.
How annoying is that?
It is, although I have done it too, Joe, because I think, okay, wait, I've got to run. I don't have time to talk for 15 minutes, but I'll, give you a text to just give me the heart of the matter.
That's
I'm not saying
point.
It's polite, but that's what I've done.
But if that's the case, I will always say, hey, I'm on my way to work or
exactly,
this or that.
Exactly, yes.
What can I have AI read back to me?
True.
This is a plea I'm making on the air in both markets. I accidentally forgot that I had a banana in my Odyssey backpack. So it rotted, and now the backpack's ruined. So if anyone has any Odyssey points over there in St. Louis, I will gladly take them.
Yeah, that's gross.
I was like, what's that smell? I don't remember leaving anything in here. And then a full just rotten banana must have been there for like a month before I, because it was when I was still on in the morning and I just discovered it yesterday. That's how long it was in there.
Delicious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Tasty.
I need 250 Odyssey points. So if anyone out there has any, greatly appreciated.
You can have mine. I don't have that many, but I'll give them to you.
Oh, Sue, greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. I love these bags, but the first one I ripped because it got stuck on the locker room at the gym. It got stuck, on the little thing that sticks out.
Sure.
And that ripped it all apart. And then this one was obviously just my stupidity. So I don't have a good track record with them, but I feel as long as I have an Odyssey backpack, I have a secure job here.
All right.
And with that in mind, let's go to the audio cut of the day.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
And this is something we talked about a little earlier. Clip 37, Bryson DeChambeau on the presidential fitness test.
We have an opportunity at being the 70th anniversary of the President's Council on Sports, Fitness, and Nutrition to literally change the fabric of kids' lives. And our first initiative is to bring back and reignite the President's fitness test, and then also reestablish some key other metrics on guidelines around building some communities, and also, again, with the President's initiatives around college, we think we can help in that regard too. But we've got a great established council with us that we believe we can change the fabric of our communities and kids' livelihoods for the future generations that are to come.
I am so for this. You know, as someone who in 2014 was 11 pounds away from being 300 pounds, I know how tough it is to get out of that lifestyle. I know how tough it is to turn it around. And hey, yes, we all like to indulge. We all like a delicious, cheap, junk food meal every now and then. But I also know that in my mid-20s, at almost 300 pounds, I had more health issues than I do in my now late 30s. So I think that we need to give kids a fair start. We need to teach them healthy lifestyle, active lifestyle, right? Everything now is made for you to be able to live the world while sitting on your butt. And we need to make sure that kids know, hey, yeah, you got to get to the gym. Yeah, you can't eat fast food all the time. And I applaud President Trump and his administration for bringing back that. I think it's a good start in that direction. Hey, it's been fun these last 2 days. Don't forget, Brad Young is here tomorrow. I'll talk to you next week on 97.1 FM Talk.
I'm Josh Eyre.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett & Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich
free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.